Hello, my name is Carrie Weber. I'm an associate editor for America Magazine, and I'm here today with Julia Haislett, who is the writer, director, producer, and editor of the new documentary, An Encounter with Simone Weil. Hi, Julia. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
One of the things that first caught your attention about Simone Weil was a quote, I believe, about attention and how attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. Now, that sort of seems to have set you on some of this journey. What is it about this statement that caught your attention?
Well, there are a number of things. One is related to the culture in which we live, in which we're bombarded with so many images and so much information, and we don't spend a lot of time pausing and being present to one another. And I think part of that resonated with me because I feel like in order for us to be present and attend to one another and attend to one another's suffering, we really have to slow down and pay attention. And I think also as a filmmaker, as someone who professionally observes and pays attention, I also was very curious about that statement. And then finally, there is a connection to my own family and the suffering that I had observed within my own family and how hard sometimes it was to pay attention to my family who were indeed suffering themselves.
Right. Right. So is some of that suffering is the death of your father by suicide.
That's correct.
Which you talk about in the film. And you write about feeling a responsibility for people in pain and a sense of powerlessness after your father's death. Did your attempt to connect with Simone Weil help you to deal with those feelings?
It did. I mean, she is an extraordinary woman who was a sort of larger than life person that, you know, I think I very much admired and could never quite become like. And obviously, to some extent, none of us can. And that's not her point or reason for being here. But I think for me, what I was able to do is come to a greater appreciation for my own role as a filmmaker, or my own role as a human being, or what I am capable of doing, and how sometimes being present and paying attention is in fact enough. And I think as a filmmaker, sometimes when I'm observing scenes, filming scenes, and seeing people who are in distress, one's impulse or my impulse is to intervene and want to help. And sometimes I think the best thing to do, or to some extent my role in that moment, is to simply record, listen, and be present. And so I think I've developed a greater sense of appreciation. And I think also to bring back to the quote in the beginning of the film, which is attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity, I think it's also sort of the hardest thing to do. So I've developed a deeper appreciation.
Mm. And how does that relate to the death of your father and your feelings about that?
I think to some extent it's about seeing my own limits. And so the degree to which how much could I have changed or how much could I have altered the course of his life, I think it helped me understand the limits to some degree of my own personal responsibility, which is not to say that I abdicate my responsibility for others, but that it's not infinite. And I think part of my grappling with Simone Weil was that her sense of responsibility for others was in a sense infinite and had no limits. And to some extent that, you know, one could argue contributed to her early death because there was a sort of limitlessness to her empathy.
Now, you seem in the film to sort of start seeing Simone Weil everywhere, seeing connections to her, and even going to the point of having one of your friends sort of almost try to become her, impersonate her, and speak to you as Simone Weil. Now, what was your hope in doing this? What did you hope to gain?
Well, I mean, part of it was a sort of crazy fantasy about conjuring someone up from the past and having an account in exchange like you and I are having now. And so I hired an actress, so I held auditions, and Soraya Brahim, the actress, we cast her, and she read at length Faye's work, and then we would have these improvised interviews about the ideas in the pieces that I'd asked her to read. And I think my goal was to, in a sense, as fantastical as it sounds, to really conjure her at least for a moment so I felt as if I was in her presence, or somehow this woman across the table from me was channeling her. And I had a couple moments of that. I think it's a very challenging, I mean, Simone Weil is probably one of the hardest people you could imagine, you know, quote, impersonating or trying to become. So I think it's a difficult experiment to pull off completely. And I wasn't really attempting. I mean, I think someone should make a fiction film about Simone Weil, but that wasn't what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. So I think it was about me working through some of the parts of Weil that I struggled with the most in a kind of dramatic context. So as a filmmaker, what I have to work with are pictures and sound. And so you know, given that there was no footage or is no archival footage of A, and there isn't a whole lot of, there aren't a whole lot of people left at this point. Actually, her cousin who's in the film just died the day before yesterday, who was a year younger than her. So just the number of people who even knew her are, you know, shrinking daily. And so this was an attempt to sort of, in, also as a filmmaker, to bridge that gap or that lack of other kinds of materials.
One of your interview subjects describes Vey as being obsessed with suffering. Did you find yourself developing a similar obsession either with suffering or with Vey herself as you went through this process? Because it seems like the project was certainly like an all-consuming one.
The project in the making of the film was indeed all-consuming. It took 6 years to finish, and I did indeed become quite obsessed by her, which I think is not an unusual thing to have happen. She's such an intense, challenging thinker and person that I think when you encounter her, it's hard to encounter her lightly. And I think in as much as I was trying to actually represent her and tell a story about her life, I was digging pretty deep into her and into her ideas. And so I did indeed become obsessed with her. I mean, and it was, you know, it's not an easy obsession to sustain in terms of trying to get to some essence, trying to represent, you know, and there are people in the beginning who said, well, why don't you just write a book? You know, there is no footage, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously my response is, well, I'm a filmmaker and this is what I do. And so it's my challenge to figure out how to represent her and make a compelling film that's both about her and inspired by her and also that connects her to now, because I think she is so relevant now, but sometimes historical figures get locked in the past and we don't see how they connect to now.
One of the people you interview in the film is Anna Brown, who's an activist. I believe she's at St. Peter's College.
That's
in
correct.
Jersey City.
Yeah.
Now, why did you choose her? Did you feel she had a particular connection to Vey, or did she approach topics similarly? What was your
Well, I came to her through a mutual friend, actually, who had been active with her in the late 80s and early 90s with Daniel Berrigan. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for a modern day Simone Vey, or someone who kind of embodied a lot of the values and ideas of Vey herself. And so I would talk to people and mentioned it to people. And he said, well, you should talk to Anna Brown. And so I met with Anna Brown. And the reason why she ends up in the film is because, well, first of all, she wrote her PhD dissertation at Fordham on the political and economic thought of Simone Vey. So she spent a lot of time intellectually contending with Vey and thinking about Vey. And then in her own work, I mean, literally when we first met, she was about to go into a protest at Fort Benning in Georgia to protest their involvement with training South American military personnel. And then not long after was going to be down in Washington, D.C. to protest the ongoing imprisonment at Guantanamo Bay. And so to me, that was very much a Vey-like person, someone who was quite literally putting their body on the line. And part of the protest in D.C. was a fast. And so I believe it was a 9-day fast. And so really, and to some extent, it was about trying to relate to and experience and witness quite physically what the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay were doing. And so she, to me, in her commitment, not just in that, but her other work in different Catholic activist communities, really spoke to me and felt very resonant in terms of, had Simone Vey lived, perhaps this is what she would be doing. I mean, we don't know, but it felt very much connected to Vey, or she did.
Right. Are those the issues that you think Vey would be active in today if she were alive? Is there a particular issue that sticks out to you that you say, yes, Simone Vey would be doing that, or she would be protesting that?
I mean, that's a really good and difficult question to answer, because, and I get asked that a lot, and I sort of hesitate to speculate about it. You know, if one just follows out the trajectory of her life or look at how she had lived her life up until her death, certainly I think she would be involved politically, fighting for the oppressed in various parts of the world. And whether that would link her to movements like Occupy Wall Street or to the Catholic Worker Movement, you know, who knows? I mean, she's an interesting character because she's someone who appeals politically across the spectrum. And that's part of what I find so fascinating about her. I mean, the people who come to see the film are from a huge range of political backgrounds and religious backgrounds, for that matter. So, you know, that's a tough question.
Now, you said in the film that you are not yourself a particularly religious person, and that Vey's religiosity sort of feels like a betrayal. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. Well, so I grew up in a very secular household, and so didn't have a particular religious orientation, but I studied religion and philosophy in college, and was very interested in religion intellectually and kind of culturally and politically, and trying to figure out how religion plays a role within a society. And but that being said, I think in a very sort of loose way, I mean, Vey's life led from being a kind of very left-wing militant activist, labor organizer in her early 20s. And then at a certain point, she loses faith with Marx and sort of the whole idea of revolutionary politics. And it's right around that time that she has her first mystical Christian mystical experiences. And so I think that my experience was, because I myself am not religious, and because coming into this film, I've developed a much deeper understanding of the relationship between people of faith and progressive politics. But at the time, I think there was a sense of like, well, if she moves in that direction, then she's in a sense leaving this world in sort of the world of politics behind. Mm. And that's the part that I felt betrayed by.
Has that betrayal sort of been healed? Do you feel doing this movie that it is less of a betrayal, that you've learned more, or you think that it still feels like a separation?
No. I certainly don't feel it as nearly as acutely as I did. I mean, and also partly in making the film, I mean, I myself am going on a journey, which to some extent I've already resolved long before the film comes out. But so, no, I think, I mean, one of the major things that the film in being in relationship to Vey for so long has helped me appreciate is the degree to which faith in all of its forms actually helps people remain active and remain committed politically. And I think that was not something that I was perhaps as knowledgeable or was as aware of. And Anna Brown was actually someone who I spoke with at some length about this question. And another reason why I was interested in her is because she was a woman in her 40s who had, you know, made it to middle age and was still alive and well and happy. And part of my, you know, question was like, you know, how do you maintain this level of commitment and engagement and live into middle and old age? Because Vey, to some extent, she was on such an intense journey that it was almost hard to imagine that she could have lived beyond the age of 34. One of the things that Anna Brown said to me is, well, for her, it was her community and her faith community that was sustaining to her, and that to some extent one could argue that Vey, in denying herself access to the church for a number of reasons, to some extent denied herself community and the solace and support that community can provide. So in answer to your question, I definitely feel a much deeper appreciation and just understanding of the relationship between faith and, I mean, I would say progressive politics. So
now, while you were editing the film, your brother passed away. Did that affect the way that you chose to edit the film or the way that you the end product turned out?
Yes. Well, when I started the film, I knew that I wasn't going to make a sort of classic biopic about Vey. There was always going to be a kind of essay quality to it. However, I had no idea that it was going to be as personal as it turned out to be. About halfway through, my brother died. And my brother was, in a sense, not really a Simone-like figure, but someone who was very engaged as an activist and scholar of African-American studies and was very committed to helping those who had less than him and were less privileged than him. And he was also someone who I, because of his mental illness for so many years, had been in proximity with and wanting to help and trying to help and being in a lot of ways unable to help. And so I think when I was finally able to look at the footage that I had shot of him before his death, I started to really see and appreciate those parallels and how they resonated and explained to some extent part of my obsession with Vey, because it's clearly a very personal and universal obsession with her. And so once I embraced that, I then started to weave in his story as well. But it was always reluctantly, and I would have rough cut screenings and people would push, you know, you need to include more and you need to include more. And I think, you know, what I have is a good balance, but it was definitely a process. And to some extent also, I think to some extent a mourning process for me as well, to be editing footage of my brother, you know, having lost him.
Right.
So
yeah, that must have been pretty tough.
It was tough. I mean, to some extent, yes, maybe it would have been nice or easier to not have been contending or making a movie about Simone Weil at that time, because I mean, it just felt almost too intense, this idea that here I am making a film about a woman who is quite literally consumed by human suffering, and then to have my brother die and to be asking these questions about, you know, what might have kept him alive, or right? So yes, it was intense, but then at the same time, I think it did give me a forum in which to really grapple with those questions.
They was the kind of person who acted in solidarity and would often limit her food choices, which is one of the things that probably led to her death. And you have in the movie that she explained some of these choices by saying that there are things I would not be able to say if I had not done these things. This is like eating only tomatoes or onions or limiting all of her sugar. What can you say now that you couldn't have said before you made this film?
That's a good question. What can I say? One of the main things that I feel that I can say or can feel now that I wasn't able to feel before I finished this film was a deeper sense of compassion for myself, and also, and I think through that for others. I think the thing about Simone Weil is that she in some ways lacked a sense, a feeling of compassion for herself. And I think that is part in my mind, and this is just me speaking, was part of the tragedy, really, of her life, is that there was such an intense compassion for others, but that seemed to be lacking for herself. And I think that in making this film, not that it's ever resolved, because life is a continual struggle in a sense, or, you know, but it has helped me gain some greater sense of compassion for some of the things that I've been through, but also I think for some of the ways that I can contribute as well.
Contribute to?
Well, I think contribute in terms of being a filmmaker, and mm-hmm. that relates to this idea of what my role is, and to have a deeper appreciation for the role of the person who bears witness, the role of the person who quite simply pays attention.
Right. So it all comes back to that original idea that brought you to this in the first place, in a way.
Yeah.
Very exactly. Good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. This has been great.